Nerd Night 49, Psychology and Stimulation with Kolke Nakai.
Hello. Welcome. Welcome. I am so excited to be here. This is actually my second time doing Nerd Night. And I'm really, really excited to introduce to you my passion, which is the story of hysteria and the vibrator. So, shall we begin? Hysteria. What is that? Well, roughly translated, it means the wandering womb. For about 2,500 years, the male ego was trying to understand this very mysterious conundrum, and they couldn't figure it out. So we looked at the... Oh, this is what they thought. Sorry. They thought that hysteria was actually a pathological and supernatural representation of female sexuality. This is just the beginning. So, you know, when we think of hysterical symptoms, it's the equivalent today to what would be considered like sexual frustration or being horny AF. And just imagine, put yourself in those shoes. Very, very horny. So let's take us all the way back. Oh, right, she's just really horny, okay? I forgot I had these on here. We can go all the way back to ancient Egypt. And you know, the earliest known medical text also talked about the uterus that was just sort of causing a lot of bodily ailments. And so the treatment at that time was to fumigate the area. They used oils and perfumes, really intended because, you know, the uterus didn't like pungent odors, clearly. And so it would relocate and put the uterus back into its position. It was very informative stuff. So this concept followed all the... Oh, that's a side note. I'm not going to get into it. This went all the way into the classic era. So, you know... Men during this time, male physicians, they were so fascinated by hysteria, they just didn't understand it. But what they did discover was that women were vulnerable because they were different. Different meaning inferior to men, naturally. So we have good old Hippocrates here, right? He's the father of medicine. He had the idea that hysteria is actually because of unbalanced bodily humors. So his idea was to do exactly what the ancient Egyptians did. He's going to fumigate the area to balance those humors. Pretty benign, right? Then Aristotle came into the picture. Now, I don't know what is his problem, but he does not like women. His theory was that women were just defective. They were defective creatures. They were gross. He didn't want anything to do with them. And he thought that the best treatment was to keep their womb occupied through sex and pregnancy. How sweet. Well, then Plato came into the picture, and I don't know why, but I have a soft spot for Plato. So his idea, this is actually very creative. He said that the uterus was actually very sad. It was sad, it was lonely, it was bored, because it didn't have a penis next to it. And so his treatment of choice, of course, was to prescribe wine and orgies. He thought it's cathartic, it's therapeutic, bada bing, bada boom, we're good. Well, so this concept followed all the way now into the Roman Empire. So this is Galen, he's a physician. His idea of hysteria, he thought actually, you know, what's happening is there is, you know, the ejaculate that's retained in the uterus, well, apparently it's rotting. It's rotting in there, and it's causing these toxic fumes and or these vapors, and it's corrupting all of the other organs. So that was a problem, clearly. So what he decided was, okay, for the women who are married, have sex. For the women who are not married, well, we're going to massage your vulva. So now pelvic massages became a thing. But it was not sexual because there was something called an androcentric model of sexuality, which means that unless there's penile penetration, it's not considered sex, just so you guys are aware. So at the same era, there was also a supernatural cause. They thought that women were actually being possessed by demons. They were so concerned, they wanted to save their women, and so their treatment of choice was to naturally free the evil from within them. So they did exorcisms, just an average Tuesday. So this leads us into the Middle Ages. Let me introduce you to Saint Tommy over here. Saint Tommy, you know, I don't really know what to say other than he is a theologian of the Catholic Church. He is a follower of Aristotle, and he's a big fucking dick. Let me tell you why. So his idea was that hysteria was caused by the fact that women are defective creatures, and it's because they sin. It's the consequence of sin, naturally. So this actually changed the relationship between women and Christianity forever afterwards. But he added that it's also due to a demonic presence, in case you weren't aware. And this also changed the idea of women. He basically blamed women for being witches, sorcerers, doing magic. He blamed women for all of the world's suffering. So basically, women were the world's scapegoat. And his treatment of choice was something called demonological psychiatry. It's a fancy word for an exorcism. But there's a couple of extra things that he did, which is really quite interesting. He tortured women. He tortured them so that they would confess that they were witches or that they were of lesser faith. And, you know, he would sentence them to death, usually in a public domain. He would burn them alive, burn them at the stake, or he would hang them. And it was insane. I can't believe that this happened. I'm surprised I'm not more animated and emotional about this, because when I think about that, I'm like, wow, he murdered thousands of innocent women just because he was so insecure or something. I don't understand. And so what was also very interesting, unfortunately, was these women felt totally persecuted. They thought that their vagina was a portal to hell, and they thought that you know, the devil was the cause of this hysteria symptoms. And they felt totally, you know, damned. They couldn't ask for, or they couldn't confess. They couldn't ask for forgiveness. And so instead of getting murked or murdered by being hung or burned at the stake, they would kill themselves. I know, it's actually really fucking sad that this is real, that this is history, and that's why I'm dressed like this, to try to lighten the load a little bit. Because it's really sad. I'm angry, actually, when I think about it. But what he didn't know was that witches live forever. I see you. So, you know, this is why I don't like Tommy Boy over here, and I'm actually really glad he's dead. So then we enter into the modern age. Okay, now this is very interesting because we're starting to become more human, meaning there's a humanistic perspective of treating people with respect. Empiricism is around the corner. The scientific revolution is around the corner. And so then we've got this guy, Thomas Willis. He comes into the picture. He's a neurologist. He's like, what the fuck are you guys talking about? It has nothing to do with supernatural shit. Actually, what it has to do with is the nerves. It has to do with the brain. And he discovered this when he was talking to a patient of his. She was a virgin. She was exhibiting symptoms of hysteria. She was like locked away, so she didn't have any sexual stimuli in front of her. But she was lusting after a forbidden sexual object, a love interest. And so her imagination evoked enough emotion to get her horny. And he was like, oh, that's what it is. It's imagination, it's emotion, it's passion, it has to do with the brain. That actually changed a lot of the way that hysteria was perceived. The other, aside from sex and marriage, which were the top two totally ineffective treatment modalities for hysteria, they were still doing the pelvic massages, and they were still, they introduced what's called water in motion, which is basically a hot tub and jacuzzis are diddling their pinky, you know? So then this moves us into, Actually, no, Thomas Willis, he said that the best treatment is not just these pelvic massages and the water in motion, because actually masturbation was demonized and you could get punished by God because it's a sin. So that's why they had this thing. But also he tried to help women balance their emotions, because this is where now we get the idea that hysterical women are emotional, just for your information. Now this leads us into the Victorian era. Now this is a very interesting era. Oh, I forgot about that too. The Victorian era. So now there is a very firm sociocultural conditioning about women belong here and men belong there. So women are supposed to be domesticated, they're supposed to be pure, they're supposed to comply and do what their husbands tell them to do, except the fact that it was really fucking hard to do that all the time. So these non-compliant women, their husbands would deem them insane and then would institutionalize them in insane asylums. So these women who were not insane, first of all, they thought that the men, the husbands, thought that they were doing a kindness. They thought they were doing something therapeutic, when really they were just trying to control women and disempower them. So these women who were not insane are now inside these insane asylums, and because of the deprivation and the deplorable conditions, they eventually went insane. And they died there. And this wasn't the only thing. You had doctors who were giving them sedative medication so that they could silence women, so that they couldn't advocate for themselves or fight back. This was real shit. I mean, there were thousands of asylums that were built all over the country to house these women. I know, I'm getting sad. I know, this is, it's really sad that this is real life. I'm sorry to be a downer. I shouldn't have bourbon before this. Now I'm feeling very, I should have had some food too. But okay. So where are we? Right. Oh my God, it gets worse, you guys. It gets worse. Let me introduce you to Isaac. This is Isaac, everybody. Okay, well, what do I want to tell you about him? Well, first of all, he's a gynecologist and he's a surgeon and he's a big fucking dick. Let me tell you why. He believed that he could cure insanity, he could cure hysteria, and he could prevent women from masturbating. Does anybody want to guess what his treatment modality was? Kind of. Clitorectomy. I know, he would just slice their beans right off as if he didn't give a shit. And it was devastating. Actually, what's really interesting is I was reading an anecdote of a 12-year-old girl who was writing in her diary, and she said that she got the procedure performed by him and he was trying to take away her sexuality. I mean, that's really what he's trying to do. And she said it didn't work. And I am so inspired by her. I feel like she's my role model, you know? So this guy's an asshole, and I'm glad he's dead too. So then we're over in France, right? I forget that I put quotes on everybody. I did this presentation back in July, and I forgot about all of this. So then we have Jean Martin over here. He is a neurologist. He's a hypnotist. He tried to see if there was a difference in hysterical women and non-hysterical women by doing autopsies on their brains, and he couldn't find anything. Imagine that. And Then he decided, well, I'm going to photograph my female patients who I have hypnotized. All right, I keep forgetting about these goddamn quotes. And he was going to photograph women with what's called a hysterical arc. Now, right, this looks scary as hell. So this image now became associated with women and hysteria. So when you think of hysteria, hysteria looks like a woman. And this shaped the way that women's health concerns were talked about in politics and the like. Well, during the same time, these men were coming back from war and they were exhibiting similar kinds of symptoms to hysteria, but it was totally gendered. It wasn't because they were weak or inferior, it was because they had experienced a traumatic brain injury and they were in shock. But this was slowly on the rise. Nobody was really talking about it just yet. It was something in the back of your mind for now. Well, then Sigmund Freud came into the picture. Now, he's a psychiatrist from Vienna. He's also the father of psychotherapy. And he believed that it wasn't just this, it had nothing to do with all this other stupid shit. It actually had to do with this trauma, but also some unconscious sexual feelings that weren't being expressed. And his treatment of choice was to then talk about this repressed trauma, which was, it was for both genders pretty much. And so this was the basis for talk therapy, essentially. Around the same time, though, there was another cause that people thought this is why hysteria was happening in women. So this is when, like, we're in the Industrial Revolution, women are now working in factories, department stores, and offices instead of sweatshops. They are not getting married right away. They're, you know, experiencing independence and freedom. They're using sewing machines, and they're literate. And all of the men thought, well, I think it's because they're overusing their female brain. Thank you. Right? I know. And they thought, well, actually, no, you need to save that energy so that you can be a wife and a mother. What are you doing? I understand you. I totally feel you. It's fucked up. And they, but here's what's really cool is that these women... Oh, these women, they would get hysterectomies and ovarectomies as a covert resistance to the pressure to comply to this idea of what a traditional woman is supposed to look like, because now there was a new woman in town and the patriarchy was not having it. So feminism was rising, women's suffrage movement was rising, and they couldn't stop it. So they thought about 75% of rich white women, I mean, let's be honest, if this was a white woman's disease, none of this was happening in third world countries or people of color. Hello. And the other than sex and marriage, which did not help at all, they did this massage therapy, right? And the doctors were going to their houses or women were coming to the doctor's offices, but the doctors were like, look, it takes a lot of time. It takes about an hour to, you know, to do that. And it was labor intensive. They were like, fuck, I've got carpal tunnel now. So it wasn't as sustainable as they would like it to be. They also did what's called hydrotherapy. Now, this isn't just the water in motion in the hot tubs. There is now a blast of water happening on the vulva. Now, here's the thing. People were concerned that they were going to overindulge because women weren't leaving these spas. I don't think I would either. It's really nice to hear the laughter all the way back there. That's really nice. Well, women were also swooning. Anybody know what swooning is? It's a symptom of hysteria, apparently, and not because of corsetry or heavy clothes or the heat or not eating. And so these women would actually carry around smelling salts. Now, this is taking us all the way back to ancient Egypt and Hippocrates area, where they need to reposition the womb and the uterus back into its place. And so they had these smelling salts. But then this also led to what's called nervous pills, which really It was a hypnotic. It was a sedative so that they could, again, silence women so that they wouldn't advocate for change politically and socially and culturally. But this is what's really nice is around this time, it's the late 1800s, we've got Mr. Taylor over here. He comes into the picture and he creates what's called the manipulator. Now, the manipulator is really interesting. It's basically... It's basically a large dining room-sized table. There is a hole in the middle of it with a sphere that gyrates and vibrates, and the woman sits on top of it. And a team of men are in the other room operating this machine that was coal-fired and steam-powered. That's why you see that thing over there, which is basically a dildo on top. You know, it's a sex toy. No, a sex machine. And it was great. It did the trick. It was wonderful. It was fabulous. People were all about it, except it was way too fucking big. How could you take that into a home office phone call, right? You can't do that. Well, then Mr. Granville came into the picture. He created what's called the electromechanical vibrator. But he did not create this for hysteria. You know why? Because he thought hysteria was a woman's privilege, if you could believe that. He thought women were faking it because they just wanted to get off or some shit. I mean, but would you blame them? So, whatever. He created this, actually. He created it for some man's issue. But the doctors were like, no, fuck you. I'm going to use this on my patients. And it went from like an hour of manual stimulation to 5 minutes. So, hello. Yeah, of course they're going to use this. And here we are into the Industrial Revolution. Electricity is inside the homes. And would you believe it that the vibrator was the fifth electrical invention, right behind right behind the sewing machine, the fan, the tea kettle, and the toaster. This came 10 years before the iron or the vacuum. I mean, talk about priorities. So, right, it's a beautiful thing. And so now here we are. All of a sudden, there's a major boom in manufacturing these vibrators. So we've got this lovely thing over here, which is basically like a hand crank, a blood circulator, you know, for Christmas. And oh my God, I forgot about this one. This is a Chattanooga. Okay, here's all I know about this one. It's 5 feet tall, it's got wheels, it's also steam powered in another room. I have no idea where the body goes. It's probably not even real. No, it is, that's a real thing, it happened. But apparently that black box right there, that was only used so that it wouldn't tip over, just to get an idea. Okay, then there's this thing. Apparently, this is the most dangerous sex toy ever. Why? Because it was operated by compressed air. So if you weren't careful, you could blow those lady bits to pieces, and it just wasn't good for business. So the women were going to these doctor's offices for these medical procedures. And they were like, Helen, let me tell you, go tell your doctor you have these symptoms. They will make you feel flushed and happy. It's amazing. And so these doctors created what's called the hysterical paroxysm. It was a medical term that they coined, which basically is a fancy word for a female orgasm. And it was looked at as the common cure of the disease. So they thought if they could get a woman to have a paroxysm, that cured the disease, except the woman had to keep coming back to the doctor's offices maybe like two or three times a week or a day. I mean, depending on what your you know, average mood is. Well, let me turn this around here. Right. Oh, right. It's a lucrative business, right? I mean, they're getting paid a lot of money, these doctors, because these women are like all about these hysterical paroxysms. But between the 1880 and 1920, there's a huge shift in the world. And women are becoming, like I mentioned, they're becoming more literate. They're getting an idea of what freedom looks like and what autonomy looks like. Hysteria is now running out of fashion, and it's totally threatening the patriarchy. They are no longer in that much control of women because these manufacturing companies like Sears and GE and Hamilton, they ate this up and they made their own vibrating devices and they started advertising as a homemade appliance. So it was kind of like a vacuum attachment. So you could vacuum and then you could do your thing and then you could vacuum again. And they tried to conceal, you know, that this wasn't really for this medical procedure. So it went from a medical device to a homemade appliance. And by the way, this on the left over here, that's a Sibian. Anybody know what a Sibian is? Of course you do. You watch porn. So, and if you don't know what this is, go watch some porn. That's an order. So, no, what's really interesting is like during the Victorian era, they told women they're not allowed to ride bicycles, ride horses, they're not allowed to use sewing machines because it was seen as like stimulating. And now all of a sudden, there's a Sibian. So now you can ride a horse in your bedroom and you can look youthful and glowy because again, this is back in the day when it's not a sexualized thing just yet. So instead of paying $2 for these medical procedures in these offices, they would spend $5 to invest in one of these things. So now, like I mentioned, hysteria was going out of business. It was not fashionable anymore, and these doctors and politicians are freaking out. They're like, what the fuck are we going to do about this? Well, they couldn't do anything. So then we enter into the 1920s, the Great Depression. So the vibrator started making an appearance in these little porn films, which, by the way, side note, this was really this compounded misogyny because of the objectification and fetishization of females and the genitalia, which, by the way, was started with that Tommy Boy motherfucker who's dead now. That's where it all started, just FYI. All of the departments and the advertising companies, they were pulling out, no pun intended, well, pun intended. It changed the way that people saw vibrators. It was now kind of like a disgusting thing. Nobody wanted anything to do with it. Well, then we enter into the 30s and 40s. Now, the war is happening. Men are fighting on the war. Women are at home and they're working. They're getting an idea of freedom and independence. They're feeling fucking fabulous and fierce. And we're also seeing people like Mae West and Joan Crawford, who are now becoming like sex symbols. Interestingly, hysteria went down by 2/3, except depression and anxiety was rising probably because of the change in social roles and, the consequences of economic uncertainty. But we move into the 1950s. We're tired of war, and people needed to learn how to cope with the depression. So they latched onto traditionalist culture. They latched onto suburbia life. They wanted to preserve the image of an obedient housewife. So now sexual repression is happening again, except the marketing companies were very clever. Now they took this idea of a vibrator and they spun it to become a beauty aid. So now it's like concealed as like a nail buffer, a back scratcher. So women are still getting off. I mean, come on. Now we have Marilyn Monroe coming into the picture, and things are happening, things are changing. Now we get into the 1960s. Of course, the 1960s were totally iconic. One, because we're cordless now. And two, the women's rights movement is happening because we're in the second wave of feminism, and there's a sexual revolution happening, and the men can't do anything to stop it. So then we get into the 1970s and everybody's talking about porn and sex and vibrators and masturbation. And we have these beautiful, lovely, fierce ladies over here. We've got Joni and we've got Betty Dodson, and they are going out of their way to educate women on how to masturbate. They're telling them masturbation and self-pleasure is your birthright. So now there's like books being written and all of this kind of stuff, but this Hitachi magic wand right here, it's the most famous vibrator, and it was seen as like a symbol of power. It's still the most powerful vibrator, the most famous or well-known or top-selling vibrator today, and I would know. That was a little too much information, but that's fine. So now we're into the 80s and 90s, and much like history, there's a pendulum swing, and there's this huge backlash to women's feeling sexually liberated, and there's the HIV/AIDS epidemic going on, teen pregnancy and divorce rates are rising. But what was great is that we had pop culture icons. So we had Madonna, we had Prince, we had Freddie Mercury, Michael Jackson. These are people who are exuding sexuality and expressing it in a way that is also very fluid. So this boomed the sex toy industry. And then in the 90s, we see sex toys in mainstream media. So now it's part of Sex and the City. It's now on Oprah. People are talking about it inside their homes and for the intended purpose, which is for female sexual pleasure. And this was also during third wave feminism, where personal empowerment is a thing and people are starting to change the system. And then this leads us to today, where we are in these last 17 years, where you can basically get any kind of vibrator you want, whatever material you want, color, glitter, you want it to move around in circles, you want pearls on it, honey, you can get glitter if you really wanted to. There is no limit. It could be battery operated, plug it into a wall, hell, you can even put it into a USB stick. So the vibrator industry is a $2.5 billion industry, and the United States is about a third of that. And this is great, actually. This is called the Lilo. It's 25 karat gold, $15,000. It's like the Apple product of vibrators. And Gwyneth Paltrow swears by it. So you know that it's gotta be legitimate. But during this time, a lot of things are changing. I mean, first of all, the internet has totally changed our lives. I mean, porn, that's one. We're talking about sex differently, like with sex education. There's more sexual freedom as far as like these sexual minorities now have communities where they can be who they are. And this wasn't seen before as much mainstream. And also, it's being seen in the socio-political movements with the past two administrations and how much of a pendulum swing there's been in the last, I don't know, since when the fuck did that happen? In January, where all of our lives turn to shit. So I'm sorry, I'm sad again. I'm gonna do one of these presentations in like 20 years and Trump's gonna be on here, I'm sorry. So, right. Oh my God, I forgot about this. Okay, so for those of you who can't see, so there's a woman who's got a glass dildo on her lap, and the caption says, "Because love never dies, put your loved one's ashes in a dildo." Remember when I was telling about that pendulum swing? Yeah, we're really fucking swung on that one. But to each their own. I'm not gonna yuck someone's yum. I think this is more just like necrophilia with extra steps. It's terrible, terrible. But here we are. Now, I've taken you through the evolution of how women's hysteria was being perceived by the male ego, and that as soon as the vibrator was invented, it gave women their freedom, and life changed forever after that. But we can't talk about the history of hysteria or the vibrator without also talking about the history of medical science, the influence of religion on female sexuality and female psychology. the insidious nature of the patriarchy and misogyny and rape culture, and then the subsequent response of the feminist revolution and what we're still fighting to this day. So here are some resources if you're interested. It's actually pretty good stuff. And you know, I want to send you guys some good vibes. You guys have been absolutely amazing. I am so thankful for you guys. Thank you, thank you, thank you.